This is your legal rights. I got to bring the microphone to me, don't I? This is your legal rights. I'm Chuck Finney. Pardon for the blooper on my part. On this segment of Your Legal Rights, the topic is the Americans with Disabilities Act, also referred to as ADA. We're going to be talking about consumers' rights, business obligations, and help available for small businesses. My guests are Steve Schrabman, an ADA compliance expert. He's an architect contractor. His business is Arcor Inc. Main office is in San Diego, although he is here. Martin Orlick, ADA compliance attorney in the San Francisco law firm of Jeffers Mangels. Regina Dick Andrezzi, executive director of the Office of Small Business, City and County of San Francisco. And Carol Kahn, director of public service programs, lawyer referral service, and information service, San Francisco Bar Association. This segment of Your Legal Rights is funded by the San Mateo County Bar Association and the lawyer referral service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Additional funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar and the Family Law Section of the State Bar. I welcome the four of you to the program. Thank you very much.
Pleased to be here.
And for those of you who are listening to us live, in the second half hour, I will give the phone number. You'll be able to call in, ask a question, whether you have a small business or whether you are someone who has a disability. I welcome you to call in, and I will give that number to you. Marty, let me ask you this. The Americans with Disabilities Act is of what significance to people in this country with respect to persons who have disabilities?
The Americans with Disabilities Act has received a great deal of media attention over the last few years. The media attention has focused largely on Americans with Disabilities Act litigation. I think it's really important to begin this program with an understanding that the Americans with Disabilities Act, which was passed in 1990, was the most far-reaching civil rights laws to protect those with disabilities, to provide full and equal access to all the goods and services that those of us who are not disabled have enjoyed. And that the idea is that public accommodations, which are largely all the businesses that we all frequent and use, have got to provide access to their goods and services and not discriminate against people on the basis of their disability. I think the media attention, however, is kind of different, because when the ADA was originally being debated in Congress, there were those who said the ADA will only be used for litigation for important social buildings and social properties, courthouses, libraries, public theaters. Others said no, it was going to become an institution and create an industry of private litigation. And it was intended to be enforced by private litigation for the most part, although the Department of Justice can weigh in and does weigh in. There have been over 20,000 ADA lawsuits filed in the federal courts in the United States since 2000. Of those, 8,000 have been filed here in California. The California Commission on Disabled Rights has published statistics recently that 3,050 ADA lawsuits were filed between September of 2012 and December of 2013. That's 3,000 in a year. So the good thing about it is, and Steve will probably talk about this, there are now over 2,000 buildings that are ADA compliant and accessible for people with disabilities to fully appreciate this.
2,000 buildings where?
20,000.
Pardon me, 20,000 buildings.
Throughout the country.
Throughout the country, okay. In California, what's the situation?
8,000 buildings are now accessible because 8,000 lawsuits were filed.
But we have many, many, many more thousands of buildings that probably are not in compliance.
Hundreds of thousands.
Hundreds of thousands. You know, one of the things, and Steve, you've been on both sides and I guess still are on both sides. You're an ADA compliance expert. You have the background of being an architect. You're also a licensed contractor. What thoughts do you have in terms of where you're coming from? Do you have a bias in this thing? Are you here on behalf of plaintiff's attorneys? Are you here on behalf of small businesses? Or are you the friend of everyone?
I think I'd like to add something else to what Marty said with regard to the numbers. And that is, if you take the litigation, the numbers that have just come out, 42% of all the lawsuits that have been filed in the last year have been filed in California. In other words, if we take the whole union, all other states, everything together, we have 42%.
What a litigious society we are in California.
In fact, if you take the next four states, we still have an aggregate greater than the next four states in litigation.
Is the litigation that we have had in this state, although the penalties can be severe, I would think that the penalties can put, in many instances, small businesses out of business. But has the litigation helped to make the ADA law more effective and more comprehensive in California, would you say, from your standpoint?
I think we have certainly a greater awareness, and I think there's a greater fear. And I think with fear, there's the mystification of the law and of its implications and ramifications. A lot of the time we get questions from people, well, the code's always changing. Why should I actually come into compliance? Because if I'm in compliance this year, I'm going to be out of compliance next year.
Is there any truth to that?
There certainly are changes to the codes. I think what we're seeing now, and we're seeing it actually with the 2013 California Building Code, the CBC, which is the ADA section, if we call it ADA, accessibility really is the word. But that really falls under, it's one of the components of Title 24. Mm-hmm. And that is actually moving into a greater synergy with the federal code. The 2010 ADA was really a trigger. It was a threshold trigger that has caused a tremendous amount of awareness of the variations in the state laws, because there are a number of other states that have their own ADA codes as well, or accessibility codes. But with the advent of the 2010 ADA and its implementation, it's really caused, it's a wake-up call. It's been a wake-up call for the state of California. And in a sense, the state of California anticipated it with SB 1608, which came out in August, was signed in on August the 19th, 2008. And that certainly had implications. But I think it's important to realize that most of the barriers that we come across, and at any one point in time, we have between 300 and 500 clients.
You're talking about when you say we, you mean your business?
Correct.
Oh my goodness! Wow.
So it's a very, very common situation.
But your business covers much of the state of California, does it not?
We do. We cover the whole of the state of California. Mm-hmm. We do work in other states as well: Arizona, Nevada, mm-hmm. Colorado, and Oregon as well.
Steve, let me ask you a question, though. There's so much to this. We cannot, unfortunately, cover all of the issues in this. Do we not have a problem today, and have for a number of years in California, of serial litigants, people who are just looking to find a problem with a small business? Do we not have that?
We do. And certainly in the community that we all live in, and dwell in, we are very aware of the several names that keep on cropping up. Mm-hmm. And these serial plaintiffs are really driving the bus, so to speak.
But they're just looking for money. Generally speaking?
And I agree with you. Most of it is just looking for some sort mm-hmm. of money. And in fact, you have a lot of people who look at this and they say, what an easy way to make money. Mm-hmm. And in actual fact, it's two things are driving it, not just the serial plaintiffs, but the serial plaintiff attorneys, who really are the ones who are going to benefit far more than the serial plaintiffs.
Well, sure. Let me come back to Marty.
There are a couple of points I'd like to make. When you ask the question, why do we have so much litigation here in California?
Yeah.
Clearly, our buildings are newer than, say, for example, New York or Philadelphia. If you go to those cities, you see conditions that just are astonishing how little has been done to promote accessibility in those cities. California, the reason we've had over 8,000 lawsuits, in my opinion, is because we have the Unruh Civil Rights Act, which permits permits the plaintiffs to recover $4,000 per offense, which essentially means each time they went to a restaurant or to a bank or to a public accommodation, they get they can recover $4,000.
This is the person who's complaining.
Yes.
Who supposedly has a disability.
Yes.
What if the person is really looking for money, doesn't have a disability, and goes to these places and actually finds a legitimate problem that needs to be corrected? Is that person allowed to get some kind of compensation for his or her, let's say, serial application?
They are not, because they are not. They don't have standing because they have not sustained. They don't have a disability.
I'm glad to hear that.
All right. So it gets even more extreme in California, because our courts have said that no longer do you have to go back to a place of public accommodation that you went to or you know about and you encountered barriers. But every time you thought about going back to that location, you would be entitled to $4,000 for not going. An example might be...
That's scary.
Yeah.
That can ruin a small business.
We recently were involved in the negotiations with a very small ethnic restaurant. The negotiations started at $50,000 for plaintiffs going three or four times to the same restaurant without even checking with the restaurant to see if the barriers have been remediated.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes months in California and San Francisco particularly to get permits to do work. And the plaintiffs would go back within 3 to 4 weeks, knowing full well that there was no way that the barriers could be remediated.
Well, of course not. No. Let me come, because I want to cover this in this first half hour, although that this relates to San Francisco, the city and county of San Francisco in particular. And apparently it is setting the example which is not being followed. And I want to come to you, Regina. Your office, which is involved with working with small businesses, trying to help them in terms of dealing with the ADA, the barriers that need to be unburied or unbarriered. What's San Francisco doing?
Well, this is Regina Dickendrizzi with the Office of Small Business. I'm very proud of what San Francisco is doing. In 2011, our office initiated a program with the SF Bar Association to work to advise businesses on what they can do first to be proactive in terms of obtaining a CASP inspection.
CASP. Well, now, what does that mean?
Certified access, contracting with a certified access specialist to come in and do a review of their facility. And then they provide a report which provides the roadmap, starting with readily achievable to the things that are more complex. We also have a guide to how to choose a CASP inspector, and then we have resources with the SF Bar Association, making sure that they know that there are tax credits that are available. Then, when Mayor Lee came into office, he initiated a program called the Invest in Neighborhoods.
This is Ed Lee you're talking
about.
Yes,
Mayor Ed Lee.
San Francisco mayor. Okay.
Correct. And it was, first off, it's very important for him to make sure that the citizens of San Francisco who have disabilities are able to have good accessibility. And our city is really doing a lot of work in and of itself on that. So, understanding the difficulty that businesses have, understanding, you know, what's required, navigating the process, he started a program under his Invest in Neighborhood program in 25 different neighborhoods where the city is sponsoring a CASP inspection and report, and then there are grant funds available that businesses can apply for to help with doing the tenant improvements.
Okay, now we're talking, now wait a minute, I want to make sure we're all on the same wavelength. Are we talking about housing now, tenant improvements? Are we talking about
commercial tenant improvements or the access to doing the access improvements?
All right.
So, and if there are businesses that are out there that are listening to this and want to find out about it, you can contact our office at 415-554-6134. Or go to our website at www.sfgov.org and then OSB for Office of Small Business. And then we can connect you with that particular program. Mm. Unfortunately, it's not citywide, but it really has set a precedent that, you know, the city is really interested in assisting our small businesses navigating this complex structure, because it can be a complex structure with our older buildings. Entryways are on a slope and on a hill. So, and also really trying to increase our accessibility for our citizens.
May I ask you this? With the financial, the people can apply, business persons can apply for grants from the city. Once the improvement is made, once the difficulty, the barrier is unbarriered, does the business person have to reimburse the city over a period of time?
No. Oh.
How can San Francisco afford to do this? This is what I don't understand.
I'm not going to go into great detail because we don't have time. Yeah. But the grants aren't for every individual business that's applied. There are certain circumstances of which there are criteria. And so there is an application process that the business does go through to be able to receive the grants for the tenant improvements. But we do have we've sponsored so far 225 CASP inspections.
That's very good.
And again, you know, really working to work with the businesses to be proactive to be proactive and not wait for a lawsuit to happen.
Yeah, Carol, what can the San Francisco Bar do for people?
Yeah, well, thank you so much. So, just a couple of comments, because we live in a very resource-rich environment in San Francisco, and Regina certainly is leading the charge. I think any listeners out there who live in counties outside San Francisco would do well to take some of this information back to their local congressperson or city council person. But in collaboration with the Office of Small Business, the Bar Association of San Francisco's Lawyer Referral Program put together a large training and made sure that we had attorneys at the ready to help advise and otherwise represent, if needed, the small micro business owner that was getting repeatedly sued and hit with demand letters, many of whom did not have English as their primary language, and so often, one might ignore their mail. If it's in another language, it was even more so the case.
There is no law that says if you know what the language is being spoken by the proprietor of a business, there is no law that requires that whoever makes the demand letter must have it not only in English but in that person's language.
I don't believe so, but Marty,
what do you say, Marty?
There is no requirement to give anyone notice. Mm-hmm. There's no requirement to give a written demand notice before filing suit, either under the Americans with Disabilities Act or under the California Building Code or the UNRU Act.
What if someone, let's say, is listening to this program, has a small business, and does not want to be sued, and doesn't want to wait until someone threatens or sues them, what should that person be doing? If you would, Steve.
Yeah, Steve Schreiberman again. I think it's a very interesting question, because we get asked that a lot by small business owners. And typically I would look at something that is really focusing on the low-hanging fruit, focusing on things that are apparent. In California, we are far more pedantic and persnickety with regard to the signage requirements than any other state, and certainly the federal.
What do you mean by that, the signage? What are you talking about?
That's very interesting. Yeah, the signage, for example, everyone's familiar with the blue signs that you see at parking stalls.
Of course, yes.
Little blue sign on the door when you come into a restaurant or something like that, place of business. It'll be next to where the credit card signs are and so on. There's things that we can do with regard to basically getting a business below the radar. And we do that for a lot of our clients. And I think the key issue here is if businesses, and we get this a lot, if businesses cannot afford to come into compliance, we tell them they cannot afford not to be compliant. Because really, if you are discriminating in a sense that you're not making your business available to what is essentially about a sixth to a fifth of the U.S. population, according to some statistics, you really are limiting what income you can derive from that business. And I think most of the things that we come across, most of the plaintiffs certainly do not carry around smart levels. They don't carry around measuring tapes or door pressure gauges and so on. And they are focusing on things that are readily apparent.
I think you can just see, or you can just trip over, obviously. Yeah.
And I think this is very interesting, what I learned today from Regina with regard to what San Francisco is doing. It's a unique program. People that can take advantage of it and benefit from it, I would grab it with both hands and both feet because it's such a wonderful program. But all cities that I've come across have some sort of guidelines how to make my property compliant, how to make my business compliant. And these are things that very often are very simple. You can get them on any websites. Most cities actually have handouts as well. I'm aware of several cities that have them in multiple languages. And certainly a lot of them are accompanied with very simple diagrams that would show business owners really what are the things that they need to focus on. If you're going to hang a restroom, the braille signage on a restroom on the strike side of the door, there is a requirement with regard to the height. But just putting it in place is already lowering one's exposure because you have that sign. So I think there are a lot of very practical things that businesses can do that don't cost a lot of money and that will get them below the radar.
Let me ask you this. When I say you, I mean the four of you here. What on the website, on the internet, is available for small businesses to go to, for small business persons to go to perhaps educate him or her or themselves? Yes, Regina, please.
So the Department of Justice, which is the federal government, does have videos and information on their website. Also, the California Commission on Disability Access at the state level also has information. And then, of course, our office has information as well.
And our office at the Bar Association of San Francisco, on our webpage, we link to a lot of these same resources in addition to the attorney referrals.
Give the website for the San Francisco Bar, will you?
Yeah, thank you. It's www.sfbar.org/LRIS for the lawyer referral and information service.
Okay, very good.
This is Marty. One of the things that we see on a regular basis is that the barriers, whether it's a restaurant or it's a bank or it's a bowling alley, many of the issues are identical, and they involve such things as California has a sign requirement at the entrance to a parking lot that says if there is disabled access parking, and if you have a placard, you're welcome to park there. Otherwise, your car will be towed. It used to be that people talked about drive-by ADA lawsuits in the pejorative about lawsuits that are filed mostly by serial plaintiffs. Now you can go online and you can go on Google Maps and you can actually see the entrance to a parking lot and you can see whether the sign is there or it's not. If it's not there, then there's exposure. And that's one of those simple low-hanging fruit pieces for $300 you can save yourself from being sued.
So, Marty, again, tell us, where should this sign be? I am aware of signs in parking lots saying, for example, if you have no business here or you park beyond a certain time, your car can be towed, and here's the towing company's phone number. I'm aware of that. But what is this sign you're talking about?
Well, my kids can tell you about this sign because I point it out every time I go. It's one of the hazards of my occupation. The signs are at the entrance to the parking lot or at the actual parking space. And then the sign has two different pieces to it that need to be filled out. And so it tells you where you get your car back if it's towed.
Sure.
And so most either if the company doesn't have the sign at the entrance to the parking lot, then that's a liability. And if it does have
this
the sign...
This is as to a disability.
A disabled person.
Disabled who, person.
Exactly.
Okay.
And if it does have the sign and doesn't fill out the information, then you have the same exposure.
Really?
And this comes up time and time again. And I've been involved in over 600 ADA lawsuits where I've defended business owners and shopping center owners and the like. And to see this simple issue that could be avoided so easily, and then to have to spend $5,000 defending against that issue.
What is this? What is the sign supposed to say for someone who has a disability who wants to park there?
It lets people know that if they have a valid parking permit or a license, they can park there. Otherwise, their car will be towed away.
Okay. All right. I think we've all seen that. Carol, please.
Just want to point out the balance here, because while there are all these very helpful tips and very meaningful, ways in which businesses need to be aware of what their obligations are, whenever a business does something that picks at the low-hanging fruit, let's say, they also then create an accessibility moment for a person with disability. Mm-hmm. And so, in fact, the greater the awareness, the more widespread these kinds of compliance measures become, the greater the accessibility at the same time. So I do want to kind of balance a little bit that while those, as Steve so rightly pointed out, are motivating factors for businesses, it ends up creating some greater accessibility.
Let me just mention this to all of you. We are coming to the end of the statewide version of the program. For those of you who listen to the program live, we continue to be live for another half hour in the Bay Area, also on the internet at www.kalw.org. In a minute or so, I'll give the local phone numbers to those of you who would like to call in with a question, a comment, etc. I'd also like you to know that on June 28th, we will have our regular Call a Lawyer night, where you'll be able to talk with a number of attorneys off the air while I'm doing the live program. You'll be able to talk with a number of attorneys off the air on an 800 number wherever you may be in the state of California, 1-800-525-9917. And so what I'd like to do at this point is I'd like you to be ready, if you do have a question or a comment, that you will join us. All right. It is about 7:27 and a half at 91.7, your local public radio station, KLW in San Francisco. I want you all to I want you all to know that there are so many issues involving the ADA that I've talked to my guests here, and I hope that we will be doing another program before the end of the year, because I think it's essential that we do this. So let me give you the phone number, 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134. If you have a question, a comment, whether you're a small business person, whether you're someone who has a disability and you are having a problem with access to a business, I want you to join us. Don't be bashful, and certainly don't wait until the program's nearly over, because that's not going to help. So again, the number 1-415-841-4134. Carol, I know the Bar Association is going to have a presentation sometime very soon. Let us know what that is, will you?
Sure. So on next Tuesday, June 17th, from 8:30 to about 12:30 or possibly noon, we're hosting, in collaboration with the San Francisco Chamber of Commerce, a long session around understanding the ADA requirements for business, and we highly recommend it's a fabulous series where so much information is imparted and question and answer is available. And so if you can at all make it, it's a wonderful session on this issue. And, it's $25 for people who are members of the chamber, $35 if you're not a member, $100 if you're an attorney who's interested in attending. And I highly recommend it for all attorneys, frankly, especially those who practice in business and real estate litigation. The number for registering, if you want to do so, is 415-352-8803.
I've had the privilege of speaking at several of these programs, and I learned a tremendous amount from the audience. And I'm only just really sad that I can't make it this time to speak to your group. I'll be attending the National Symposium, ADA Symposium in Denver.
Ah, it's all right. June 18th. What's the time period on that?
June 17th.
Tuesday the 17th in the morning. June 17th.
Get there at 8:30 for coffee. Starts at 9.
Okay, starts at 9. Let me also, before we continue with your calls, by the way, I want to let you know that the San Mateo County Law Library is having a presentation on next Wednesday, June 18th, a free noontime lecture on government benefits and senior citizens. This will be a one-hour lecture. You can bring your sack lunch if you like. It'll be made by Claire Ramsey, who's a staff attorney at the Legal Aid Society of San Mateo. It's open to the public, of course. It's from noon, probably until 1, on Wednesday, June 18th, at the San Mateo County Law Library, which is at 710 Hamilton Street in Redwood City. If you'd like more information about that, it's 650-363-4913. 650-363-4913. Let me tell you who my guests are. And you probably wondered, who are these people? Because I only introduced them at the beginning of the program. Steve Schrabman, who's an ADA compliance expert. He's an architect, a contractor. His business is called Arcor Inc. Main office is in San Diego. Martin Orlick, ADA compliance attorney with the San Francisco law firm of Jeffers Mangels. Regina Dick Andrizzi, executive director of the Office of Small Business, City and County of San Francisco. And Carol Kahn, director of public service programs, the Lawyer Referral Service and Information Service, San Francisco Bar Association. So those of you who would like to call in, please feel free to do that. I want to take our first call with Mary. Welcome to Your Legal Rights. Mary, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
It's your turn, my dear.
Great. So I have a question that hasn't been covered yet. I just want to make sure that you guys do address learning or mental disabilities, not just physical or access disabilities.
Ah, all right. Let me get some comments on that. Mary, turn your radio back up, will you? Thank you very much for calling. What about Marty? What about mental disabilities?
Hi, Mary. I wanted to talk more in terms of mental disabilities as well as sight impairment and hearing impairment. More and more, we are seeing legislation and we're seeing new regulations that relate to website accessibility. It might seem like an oxymoron to think about website accessibility for people who are blind or of low vision, but there are the internet has become an extremely important connection for people who are blind, people who have low vision, people who have cognitive disabilities that Mary may be talking about. And we are seeing a greater emphasis by the Department of Justice, who has gone after a number of large entities because their websites are not accessible to people who are blind or low vision. And there are applications that are available now that are screen reader software type applications, so that if you wanted to go online to Target, for example, and buy a shirt, you can go to the Target website, which is now completely accessible to people who are blind and have low vision, and you can order that product, and it'll actually walk you through each screen on the website.
Well, has that been done through the ADA?
Yes, it has.
Really?
Yes, it has. And also, the Federal Communications Commission has been very active on telecommunication relay services for people who are deaf or hard of hearing or have speech impairments. And so this is a system where you at home, you have a webcam on your computer and you speak American Sign Language, for example.
Wow.
You then call a relay operator who speaks American Sign Language and also speaks. And so they will then call the bank or the restaurant or the store, and the person who is deaf will have a conversation with the relay consultant, who then speaks to the store, and then it goes back and
Incredible.
Forth in a triangle.
That's wonderful.
There have been a number of ADA investigations by the Department of Justice. Mm.
Wonderful, wonderful. Yes, and Regina, please.
I'd like to do a plug for a business in San Francisco, Mozzeria, who the business owners are both deaf and all their staff is deaf, and they use actually that particular tool and technology.
What kind of business is it?
It's a pizzeria, a restaurant in the Mission on 16th Street, and they're able to take in call in takeout orders because of that technology.
That's wonderful, wonderful. Let me do this. You had, Steve, you handed me a note here. What comments did you have on this one?
Let me explain, because first of all, probably my handwriting's not that good. Steve Schreiberman again. Really what we're seeing now is a lot of what we call point of sale lawsuits, and there's some of them are class actions now. I'm not sure some of the main stores that have been involved. And the point of sale relates to two things. One, an accessibility issue, and that relates, and then it, the driving factor is privacy. What I mean by that is we have a lot, everything is now point of sale. There's a lot of touch screen applications where you just sort of touch on something and it recognizes, you know, your signature. We now are moving to where a thumbprint could even be something that's recognizable at some point in time and give access to certain information with regard to highly sensitive stuff. But one of the things with these lawsuits is that vision impaired people now, in order to be able to use a point of sale device, often have to enter their PIN code, and they don't know who's standing over their shoulder, who's watching it.
Of course.
And now has complete and utter access to their private information.
Yeah.
Through their PIN code and may be able to use it for what, you know, the credit card or something like
for
that.
For identity theft, of
exactly.
Course.
And identity theft becomes a big issue. And so there are a lot of, we're seeing a lot of litigation related to this now that as we move into accepting this internet age, there's going to be a lot of these types of things that come about now.
Yeah, I mean, have more than a half a dozen lawsuits involving those similar issues, either point-of-sale device, touchscreen devices, and things like that.
Let me do something for just a moment. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. For a referral to a lawyer, you can call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. The San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own if you're in San Mateo County. That number is 650-369-4149. 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in the state of California, every county in California has a bar association and lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. You should be able to get a human being. At least that's the goal that I think we would all like to have. But I think it's still possible. And tell them what the problem is, whatever your problem may be. They'll do their best to try to find someone who's experienced and competent in the area, an attorney, of course, and set you up for a half-an-hour consultation. Most counties, nearly all of them, for a half-an-hour consultation, you will pay either a low of $25 or a high of $35. So it's a great service if this is something that you may need. All right, let's do this. We have Joe. Welcome to Your Legal Rights. Joe, are you there?
Joe, hello. Now I am.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I wasn't before. I didn't hear the click, and I was wondering about that.
Okay. Hey.
It so happens that I happen to be, I wouldn't call myself an expert in all in the things of visual impairment, but, well, I am blind, so I guess I am.
Mm-hmm.
What I have to say, first of all, as a compliment to businesses at large, I have been saved a lot of embarrassment in the last several years when I go to an establishment and I don't know which is the men's or the women's restroom until I reach up and there's that, you know, the circle or the triangle. And, you know, I don't even have to look at the letters, although I can. But that really helps, I have to admit.
Mm-hmm.
But the previous caller is correct in that, in at least in my opinion, since its inception, the ADA really has, in some ways, caused a little bit of a problem for visually and for sensory impaired altogether, as opposed to, and that's, you know, I don't begrudge anybody what they get, but it for a long time was kind of disconcerting to try to have to reach down instead of up on elevator buttons to figure out where the darn things were. I think we're kind of used to that, but it took a while. I think the ADA tried to be all-encompassing and really didn't do very well at that because after a certain point you just can't. I don't, you know, that's my comment on
Let me get some comments for you, Joe, on this. Thank you very much for joining us. Turn your radio back up, will you?
Thanks.
Thanks a lot for calling. Go ahead, Marty, please.
Hi, this is Marty. Joe, I think you are absolutely correct. It's much easier to figure out how to remediate a parking lot issue where the slope is more than 2% or the threshold to get a wheelchair through a door or a door width than it is to figure out in 1990 when the ADA first passed how to make websites accessible to people who are blind or low vision. The whole idea of cyber accessibility didn't exist in 1990. And if you take a look at what was in the 1990 standards for how you make an ATM machine, for example, accessible to someone who is blind, it simply said you make it independently usable to someone who is blind or has low vision. Well, what in the world does that mean in a highly technical, sophisticated machine? And now in the 2010 standards, of course, we have 11 or 12 pages of the technical specifications. So you're right, Joe. It's taken some technological evolution to get to where we are. And it's much easier to figure out how to get around in a wheelchair than how it is if you're cognitively disabled, if you came back with post-traumatic stress disorder, for example, from Iraq or Afghanistan. You don't recognize that necessarily if you're a teller in a bank.
No, you don't. Let me throw something out to you just for clarification. Certainly in San Francisco, a major area where there are tenants, there are apartment buildings, etc. Does not the ADA apply to apartment buildings for the protection of? I see Carol shaking her head. No, Chuck, it doesn't. So it does not apply to residential businesses. Is that right?
Yes and no.
That's a real good lawyer answer.
Oh, like that answer.
Oh, boy.
Let's take a typical apartment complex.
Yeah.
The apartment complex has individual rented units.
Yes.
But it also has a leasing office, and it also has a pool, and it may have a clubhouse, and it has accessible parking. The ADA does apply to the common areas.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
But within the units themselves, the ADA doesn't touch that.
Uh-huh.
The Fair Housing Act, however, does.
Oh, I see. Now, the Fair Housing Act is also a state. No, it's only
a federal law.
Federal law. All right.
Yeah.
And yes,
Regina. With Office of Small Business, I just want to touch quickly upon property owners. And because for property owners, primarily with commercial space, since my realm in this world is really dealing with business, is just to remind that property owners are also vulnerable and also have the obligations for making sure that their property is accessible. And in San Francisco, to really encourage that, we passed our own law, and it's Chapter 38 of the Administrative Code, where we now require property owners to make their entrances, exits, and bathrooms accessible, or make sure that you notify a prospective tenant or new tenant that the property may not be fully accessible, and to that you work out who has the obligation for dealing with this accessibility improvements.
So if the landlord, if the owner of the building lets the potential tenant know who has a disability that this may not be accessible to you, does that relieve the landlord, the owner of the property, from any obligation?
I'm sorry. This is commercial property, so it's the business. It's not
residential.
Okay, it's not
the business,
residential.
Not landlord-tenant. Okay.
Right,
okay.
And I apologize for the lack of clarification.
Well, it's probably me, not you, Regina.
We sort of segue from residential units into commercial property. So this is at the time of lease and lease renewal that the Chapter 38 is really designed so that the prospective tenant is, one, notified that there might be potential ADA liabilities that need to be dealt with. They're required to hand them a brochure that our office produces to help give them some guidance around what to do and how to determine this. But again, it's to help really have that conversation because, again, many of our entrances still in our commercial spaces are not fully accessible. It's an expensive, can be in a very expensive and time-consuming process to get through the city to deal with making those entrances accessible. So we really want to encourage the dialogue between the tenant and the property owner on how best to resolve.
So if Regina, the property owner, says, by the way, if you want to rent this commercial property, I want you to know that it's not accessible here. And the prospective tenant says, no, that's fine. So if there's a problem, if someone who has a disability finds, hey, I want to go into this business, but I can't, is it then the tenant's responsibility, financially speaking, to make the repair?
I think Marty's better to
answer
this.
Marty, what about that?
This is Marty. First of all, I think we need to know that the Americans with Disabilities Act applies to those who own, those who lease or lease to or operate a public accommodation. Okay. So the answer to your question is...
All of the above, huh?
No, it's actually very clear that the plaintiff, the disabled plaintiff, can sue either or the landlord or tenant. And the landlord and tenant are separately liable to the disabled plaintiff. Now, between the landlord and tenant, they can have a lease in which the landlord says, tenant, you're responsible the ADA compliance with laws.
Okay.
But they both get sued, and it's a tangled web.
That we weave,
indeed.
All right, okay. All right, let me again, for those of you who may have tuned in just a little bit late, let me tell you who we have here. These are very knowledgeable people about the Americans with Disabilities Act. And let me tell you, Carol Kahn is the Director of Public Service Programs, Lawyer Referral and Information Service, San Francisco Bar Association. Regina Dickendrizzi, Executive Director of the Office of Small Business, City and County of San Francisco. We have Martin Orlick, ADA Compliance Attorney with the law firm, San Francisco law firm of Jeffers Mangels. And Steve Schraubman, ADA compliance expert, architect and contractor. His business is known as or called ARCOR, A-R-C-O-R, Inc. Main location is in San Diego, but it is a statewide business. For those of you who would like to ask some questions, we still have some time. 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. And Ed, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi there.
Great program. I think I missed part of it. I'm wondering about invisible disabilities, mental difficulties, obsessive compulsiveness, for instance, and the workplace. ADHD also, you know, I have a friend with that. I'm wondering how that can be addressed and finessed in the job interview. I guess not, but, I mean, do we have any protection?
Well, let me get some comments, Ed.
And,
if you turn... go ahead.
I don't know if ageism is covered, if age and hiring, I don't know if that's
and
covered.
Hiring, okay. Let's see. This is a big area that you've opened up with your several questions. Turn your radio back up, will you? Let me get some comments for you. Who wants to start on this one? Go ahead, if you would. Steve.
I'm the least knowledgeable about the law, so I'll say that straight out at Steve Schreiben again. But I think certainly a lot of the things that you brought up, Ed, are actually covered by other aspects of other laws, at least. There's quite a few laws on our statutes, as we know. They keep on getting more and more. And a lot of that's covered by other aspects. Typically, somebody who's disabled, it's really relating to identifying something that affects one or more major life function. That's really the primary thing. So, again, is ADHD covered? I really can't answer that, because I think the idea is, to what extent does it affect someone?
For those of us who don't know what ADHD is, what is that?
Attention deficit disorder, basically.
Okay.
And
hyper
disorder is somebody who's hyper about it. Obsessive compulsive could be a disorder. You know, if you leave your house and you don't know if you locked the front door and you go back a dozen times, that certainly could be an issue, and it could have a lot of impact on work and remaining in a job. So these are things that are typically covered in other areas. There is also ADA. There is an aspect of ADA that really relates to the workplace specifically. I don't really have anything to do with that. I never see cases relating to that. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure that Martin will have had that type of experience, workplace discrimination.
No. Carol, please.
Yeah, so as Steve is mentioning, this is Carol again from the Bar Association of San Francisco. So there are laws, federal and state, and especially in California, and especially progressive state in this arena, where employer-employee relations are governed by anti-discrimination statutes and laws. So, you know, to the caller, if you have questions about that or perceive for some reason that you have been discriminated against based on your disability, you know, that may be something you want to consult a lawyer about to be educated a little and otherwise understand your rights under those provisions.
Okay. All right. Yes, and Marty.
This is Marty, Ed. Not too long ago, I interviewed a blind candidate to be a lawyer in my office. And I particularly was intrigued by his background, because he clearly understands accessibility better than just about anyone would ever understand it, and has complete credibility with both the disabled community and with the non-disabled community. So the issue, there are five titles to the ADA, and Title I is discrimination in employment based upon disability. You can't do it. And so if an employee has a particular need, and in this instance, for example, I knew that this particular candidate had a very different need on how to review legal briefs, for example. I would have to convert them into a form that he could read them on a computer through some sort of a dialogue application. You have to provide those services and accommodations for employees who request them.
Okay, very good. All right. Can we go on to the next person? Or Steve, you have another comment.
Yeah, I just wanted to say one thing we did touch on earlier on, and that's the CASP certification, because I think a lot of people are asking, what practical steps can they take? And we spoke about getting rid of the low-hanging fruit. The signage is a big thing in California. But I wanted to specifically speak to Regina with regard to the city of San Francisco, because it's a unique program where, according to this program, people can actually get their property CASP certified through this program, and it's something that's covered, which I think is, if more cities started this sort of program, it really would. It does two things. It lowers exposure, as far as I can see it, and it makes buildings more accessible, which really is the whole purpose of the ADA in the first place. So I think we really get two birds with one stone, so to speak, in that instance. So I think that's something, if anyone has questions on the CASP, if they want to look it up, that's certainly something to look at. And that CAS little p. Why it has a little p, I cannot tell you.
You mean if you Google it, you're saying we can Google it?
Yes.
Capital C, capital A, capital S, and small p?
Yes, you can basically go to the state website, and you basically just type in CASP, C-A-S-P. That's probably a very good way to get
around. All
right,
very good. All right, let's see. We've got Ruth Ann. Ruth Ann, welcome back to the program.
Hi there. Thank you very much.
Sure.
I was wondering, someone called me thinking I would know, and I didn't, because...
Well, just tell us what the question is.
With someone who was concerned about parking in an apartment complex and her accessible space was taken away, and she didn't know if she had a legal right to have accessible parking in the.
So she has a disability. Is that correct? And she is.
And I thought is that if it wasn't under the ADA, it would be under Title 24 of California. And I went and looked at the library through all of Title 24. I did find something, but I didn't know if there was anything in the ADA.
So you're saying this woman who is a tenant in a building, her accessible parking space was taken away?
Right.
Well, let me get some comments on that. I don't know whether my...
And I didn't know if there was a legal for the number of, like, if there are so many units, how many proportions.
Let me get some comments for you, Ruth Ann. I'm not sure that this is something that we will have an answer for, but turn your radio back up. Thanks so much for calling.
Okay.
Anybody have any answer for her? Marty?
Yes, Ruth Ann, there's a ratio under both the California Building Code and the Americans with Disabilities Act that 1 in 25 spaces needs to be accessible, and of those, a minimum of one needs to be van accessible, and unless she had some specific contractual right to that space from the building owner, she had to share that space in common with everyone else, and that includes guests as well who might be disabled. And so
in other words, you're saying under the law, the building owner did not have to give her own accessible space?
That's right.
Wow.
Yeah, but the building owner needed to have the right ratio.
Okay.
And so if the building owner didn't have the right ratio, then that's a lick on the building owner. But if the building owner had the right ratio, let's say five spaces were required, including one van space, and six people showed up who required accessible parking, the sixth person is unfortunately going to have to park somewhere else.
Now, where you're saying this is the building code. Is this the state building code or what?
Yes. The Americans with
Come closer.
It's the Americans with Disabilities Act and the state building code.
Okay. All right. All right.
If I can interject, there's two parts of the California Building Code, typically under the 2010, which is the one that's just gone out at the end of last year. There's what we call Chapter 11A and Chapter 11B. Chapter 11B related to commercial properties, anything that was not residential, essentially. And Chapter 11A really refers to condominiums and to apartment homes and so on. And what Marty was also, I think he mentioned earlier on, and I just want to relate back to that, apartment communities are unique because they actually fall under both sections, because they have normally a commercial entity. The commercial component comprises the sales office, and that falls under Chapter 11B. That has to meet the 1 in 25 accessible parking.
When you say Chapter 11B, where in the codes?
You can even look it up still, but it's under the old California Building Code, and it still really applies now, except we've gone with a different numbering system, really. We're following now the federal code.
Because I'd like to have people be able to access this if they could. What would they, if they were going to try to Google this, what would they do?
Again, the state website has a lot of this information.
All right.
They have the old
code. California. All right.
Exactly, and the current code.
We are unfortunately, just about out of time. What I want to say is, for those of you who may have had questions and we weren't able to get to you, I am hoping that we will do another program on this in the not-too-distant future. Again, if you would very, very briefly, Carol, talk about the presentation that's coming up next Tuesday, the 17th. The time is in the morning, et cetera. Give a phone number if people want to have more information, if you would.
Sure. So this is happening at the San Francisco Chamber of Commerce on Tuesday, June 17th, starting at 8:30 in the morning. It's a fabulous one-stop shop for all this information and more. Attorneys are absolutely invited, business owners invited, and any interested parties. The number is 415-352-8803.
We have run out of time. I want to thank you very much, all of you, Steve Schrabman, Martin Orlick, Regina Dick-Andrizzi, and Carol Kahn for joining us on Your Legal Rights. Thank you very much. Your Legal Rights production staff with us on this segment is Eric Wayne. Eric, nice to have you with us. Production assistant is Martin McLean. Funding for Your Legal Rights, this episode, has been made possible by the San Mateo County Bar Association, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Additional funders of the program are the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, and the California Applicants Attorneys Association. Thanks very much for joining us on Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney.